Istanbul 74 presents How Can We All Make It Into the Future? 74 podcast series. On the podcast, we discuss the global pandemic we're currently facing and how it'll reshape our reality and society with opinion leaders and creative minds from all over the world. Let's explore together what the future might bring for us.
Hello everyone, welcome to Istanbul 74. I'm Gabriel Koslovski. I'm a Brazilian architect and curator, currently assistant curator for the Venice Architecture Biennale 2021 that has just opened last week. So check it out if you can. Today I'm fortunate to have here with me Oz Orner. Oz is a multidisciplinary artist working the intersection between sound and urban research. He's the artistic programmer of the Koç University Cultural Center and is finishing his PhD at the Istanbul Technical University, where he works in the field of soundscape perception. For me, this conversation today is exciting because on the one hand, his work with sound, music, and silence goes beyond my area of knowledge. But on the other, our interests kind of intersect in the urban realm. So it's a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you. It's a pleasure for me to be here.
Fantastic. So maybe let's start from the beginning, just to situate the conversation. Yeah. Can you tell us briefly how your involvement with sound research and music started?
Yeah, my interest in sound goes back to the times in the during high school, actually, at the age of 17. When I discovered, when I was using this PC computer and there was this Windows sound recorder, this the most simple program ever. And me and my friend would record sounds, silly sounds or sounds from our room, from outside. And we would reverse them, we would try to mix them, but not in a sense that we would understand now. So we would make like little experiments with recorders and also recording sounds to the cassette recorder. And later on, like I discovered this Dance EJ, this music mixing program, very, very simple at the age of 18, I think. And then my world changed, I would say. So I started recording sounds, I started mixing them and really making some experiments, real experiments. And it was the joy, the real ultimate joy, I would say. There's no one like musician or artists in my family. But yeah, this technology time that I'm raised at brought all these to me. So after years, I had the interest in urban cultures and urban policies. Meanwhile, and I did study at master's. I did study European urban cultures. So having graduated from Manchester Metropolitan University and Helsinki University of Art and Design, that's Aalto University now. At the year 2006, I started being involved in projects connecting art, design, and psychogeography, and also sound. And so this connection between city and sound became more academic and bigger for me.
And within this this kind of intersection between city and sound, I know that your work revolves around concepts of acoustic ecology and soundscape. Exactly. And by doing some research, I discovered that the modern version of such concepts actually flourished around the 70s.
Yeah.
And had the Canadian composer Murray Schafer as one of its founding fathers, with Schafer's book, for instance, Tuning of the World, right? Yeah. Of 1977. Yeah. That has pretty much set the theoretical agenda around these ideas. So can you tell us how your work relates to this lineage and the relevance these early theorizations take in present days?
Yeah. After these studies, I started this PhD program at Istanbul Technical University and started working on soundscape. And there I got to learn more theories, these soundscape theories, acoustic ecology theories, which later were stems of my research study. So this, Murray Schafer was one of the biggest names for my study. If you like, I can tell you a little bit about what this thing is about, more or less.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That would be great.
So the expression acoustic ecology in the literature is used more or less in the same sense as soundscape ecology. And this concept can be expressed as the field that studies the effects of an auditory landscape on the physical response and behavioral characteristics of its inhabitants. So we mean about the ecology between the inhabitants. So there's the sound ecology here that we talk about. So this founder of this concept, Schafer, defined the same concept as the field that studies the systematic relationships between people and sound environments. Like this seeing thing is very important, we know. I mean, our eyes are very dominant. I mean, in perceiving the things around us, or for planners, for architects, for designing the space, seeing is very important. Aesthetic perception is very important. But here we do eliminate hearing, which is at least as much important as seeing. So it's of course different, but they feed each other, seeing and hearing. Seeing is, to me, more linear kind of perceiving things, but hearing is more like surround. You got to really, I mean, get things in 3D. You hear from your back, from your right, left, front, and from a bigger sphere. So when I discovered this in time of, you know, when I'm researching sound and making music, this got to be my real thing. You know, I said to myself, I got to hear more. I got to listen more. Because I feel like this hearing things and sounds, it's a more like rather untouched, a virgin area of study.
But at the same time, it's been, these ideas have been circulating within your medium, your kind of a disciplinary medium for a while as well. It just has not probably expanded outside the bubble, right? For instance, I am someone that's very, for whom like urban studies and the city and urbanization are very important central topics in my work. Yeah. And I agree with what you said, like the predominance is of the visual, the kind of the hearing is put in second plane. It's something that I have not ran across many times throughout everything I study and see. So that's why for me it's interesting to have this conversation, because it kind of opens a new realm of knowledge or a kind of a way of experiencing the city.
Yeah. I mean, to me, the spaces do speak to you when you listen to it. So it releases its different dynamics, different layers of sounds that we don't normally hear. So, but when you get to open your ears and tune your ear to the environment, then you get to be in sync with the language of the space. So it there becomes the communication with the space. So that's why listening to our environment has a different soul in it. And it's not only the environment, it's a practice of listening. So you get to learn to listen to people, you get to communicate better, you get to listen to yourself even better. So it has different reflections. So society, people, environment, built environment or natural environment, listening to these and talking with these, sensing the language and speaking in that language becomes to give you a different space. So and also gives you an identity of space, because when you feel that you get to talk in that language in a group, for example, if you can talk in that language in a group, then you feel more like connected to that group. You get to have more identity. That's more or less the same. You get to be more connected to that space when you get to speak with that space and when you get to understand that space.
Yes. And one of the methods to reach, to kind of develop this understanding is that of what you call the sound walks, right?
Yes.
When I was getting to know your work and I saw this idea of the sound walks, they instantly reminded me of the work of the Situationists, specifically Guy Debord's De Rive, that was actually contemporaneous to Murray Schafer's formulations, right? More specifically, their techniques of experiencing the urban environment through methods of moving through the city and kind of allowing the geographical conditions to shape the emotions and behaviors of individuals. So I wonder if sound walks are kind of extensions of these explorations and modes of perceiving the urban environment.
Yeah.
And maybe that's also an opportunity to discuss a little bit the work Kadikoi Acoustic.
Yeah, sound walk is a method that I discovered years ago when a French artistic group came to Istanbul and walked us through the streets of Istanbul. I got very, very excited, and that was one of the biggest things in my life, I would say. So that's when I decided to integrate that to my life and to my work. So I can say what sound walk is briefly. So sound walk is a very, actually very simple tool. It is used as a psychogeographical methodological tool, and it's an empirical method used to describe the concept of soundscape and components of the space. As you say, it is introduced by the acoustic ecologist Schafer in the 60s. And this sociological method serves to describe people's perceptions and experiences of the acoustic urban space they are in. So it's really a tool to play the city, you know, play in the city and play the components of the city.
But how do they actually take place?
So
what is the practical aspect of sound walks? How do you apply this method? And
yeah, I will tell about that, but before that I want to tell you the connection with Situationism.
Yes, please. Yes.
At the end of 60s, also another theorist, Michael Southworth, said, he has a good, I got a quote from him, when technological progress brings urban voices to the brink of chaos, it is no longer enough to appeal to the eye in urban design. So that's one of the first times that he really thought sound walk could be a tool to understand the layers of urban dynamics. So, and Westerkamp, one of the other theoricians, said any trip made for listening to the environment is a sound walk. This is as simple as that. And it's an acoustic training by exposing the audience to the sound composition of the environment. So here, we can talk about Situationism, which is a psychological theory that places emphasis on external and situational factors. It tells that in personality and in behavior, the external situational factors are crucial. And also in, I mean, one of the initiators, Guy Debord, in 1955, says, use the psychogeographic techniques to explore the art of derive, as you said. Mm-hmm. So taking part in psychogeographical derive, which means, like in French, I think drifting, it tells about sound walk. The best way to do a bit of psychogeography is simply to take an unplanned ample through your local area, soaking it in with no expectations. So this is called going on a derive or urban drifting. Mm-hmm. Let yourself be delighted by something new, they say. So sound walk is being derived from this concept, actually. So it's a more modern or contemporary way of understanding or dynamics of urban design and social design and everything. So Kadıköy Acoustic is, in short, is a thesis research project focused on the concept of soundscape. Mm-hmm. My thesis is, the name is Space Speaks to Those Who Listen to It, as I said in the beginning. From sound walks and spatial perception studies to urban planning, the Kadıköy Acoustic example. And here, the study includes spatial perception and reading methods developed for Kadıköy Square specifically, because it's an important urban area of Istanbul, Turkey, as well as the study also includes the participatory studies such as sound walks and mind mapping workshops. In this study, to give an example, we gather a group of people, we make an open call like we did in the 13th Design Biennial. We make an open call and people to come, and we ask them to close their eyes. So our sound walks are made this way in order to get the information better, the sound information. And they are guided by people who are trained before and who are coming from the disciplines of meditation, yoga, and dance in order to be able to be in sync with them and move them easily. And also those people has to trust those guides in a very chaotic urban setting. That's why they do help them. And they do walk for approximately 40 minutes in the square. And of course, Kadıköy Square is really very chaotic place. It's not an easy place to just, you know, go and walk eyes closed and have the peace. So it's a challenging practice, but it has its graphic inside because we have a route of the square. And we have specific stops, and these stops have their unique sound marks, let's say. So there are different sounds being revealed there. I mean, we're not giving any extra sounds. There are already sounds there, like sound marks, like the nostalgic tram sound, the nostalgic boats sound, or announcements. Political announcements or municipality announcements or mosque sounds, opera singers sounds, the state conservatories there as well, or the flower sellers and such, and the seagulls and birds, nature, so many layers there. So we wanted these layers to be heard by them as much as possible. There are also like composite structures where we have like 14 layers all together becoming a composition by itself and becoming a sound mark there. Mm-hmm. So the idea is to see what people feel in what place. So we ask, what do you hear now? What is the thing that makes you feel good? What is the sound that makes you feel irritated? Or what do you hear the most? What do you hear the least as such? So, I mean, in short, it's this, the practice. But after that, we ask them, after 40 minutes, we ask them to open their eyes, which is very difficult for them. Some of them don't want to open their eyes because they get to go in a different realm and they don't want to wake up. So they do wake up, and then we go to a workshop area, and we do draw the mind maps, and mm-hmm. and the perceived sound maps. So what they perceive is being drawn by themselves on the maps, on Kadıköy maps. And then these maps are analyzed and then synthesized, and then got into we see the bigger picture where people feel what.
Extracting personal information to create a more kind of collective experience.
Yes, exactly. Because we need more user experience. We need more users, the participants, feedback about the space, what they feel, what they hear, what they want to do, where they want to be directed to, and such. Because otherwise, it's always a top-down approach by the municipalities and the governments to design the area, the regions, and the squares in a more like classical way. Related with sound, it's the common thing is the noise control policy, where the governments do have regulations about sound decibels, technical measures, where they have to cut the specific frequencies that are higher than specific decibels, and or mask specific sounds. For example, if a club is giving a specific decibel that is more than regulated decibel number, then they get the penalty. So this kind of policies we have, but we don't have anything that is more participative or more user-oriented. So we don't know what people feel and hear, and also we don't know what the space has in terms of sound marks. I mean, I feel that these are important in terms of cultural heritage as well, or intangible heritage, because sound could be perceived as an intangible heritage.
Did I understand correctly that you're advocating for a sort of more collective approach towards understanding which sounds are good or bad to a specific environment, instead of just being decided through a kind of a almost managerial, techno-managerial standpoint?
Yeah, because we don't know what people feel about sound and noise by itself. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it could be, I mean, governments could say, hey, this is noisy here, let's cut these frequencies and let's just eliminate these sounds, let's close these shops, or, you know, let's have strict regulations to these clubs. But we don't know how people feel. Mm-hmm. And citizens are there to have the prosperity, to be happy, right? Mm-hmm. So the governments should normally satisfy the citizens. But it's generally this top-down approach. But here we have, I mean, I propose a more bottom-up approach where these tools could be used in order to have a more collective idea of designing a master plan for regions. Mm-hmm. So I don't say that the noise control policies are bad or they should not be. Of course, we have to have regulations. We need them. But these more participatory projects, participatory approach-oriented tools under the name soundscape management, needs to be integrated to these policies so that it could be more holistic.
And you mentioned noise a couple of times. And I saw a diagram that you used to present one of your projects in which there was this drawing of a city titled City Noise. And the diagram pointed to the many different sources of noises within the city. So I'd like to discuss the kind of evolution of the concepts of noise and silence. But perhaps let's start with noise, because this is something you already started talking about. And to understand the way, or to kind of frame it through the way you understand this concept within the scope of your work.
Yeah, it's not so easy to define noise now, today, because it's really, as you said, it really evolved over the time. But generally, the term noise is often referred to as unwanted sound. And sound itself, in practice, are symbol in our brains, which decodes their meanings when they are heard. So they're basically the meanings. So maybe we can refer to Schaeffer again here, because Schaeffer talks about three types of noise. First, unwanted sound. So defining noise as unwanted sound. Second, non-musical sound, which could be non-periodic vibration. And third, any loud noise disturbance in the signaling system. For him, like unwanted noise, loud noise, and the intervention to the signal are independent factors, and they are the factors in revealing emotional responses such as anger in individuals. But on the other hand, some define noise as the yet unnoticed sound that has the potential to be redesigned and is waiting to be evaluated in a new context to be appreciated. And also about this, Gurney, another theorist, uses the expression noise is a sound that is outside the character of the space. So this is one definition as well. So if that sound does not belong to that space, if it's coming out of that space, then it could be seen as noise.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But this is also debatable, because, you know, it's such a chaotic, we have such a chaotic form in the cities, and from different cultures, different speeches, sounds, languages, everything. And I mean, and it, when we have a more homogeneous space, and if a totally out of nowhere sound is coming to that space from another group from somewhere else, then yeah, this could be perceived as noise.
Mm-hmm.
It could be out of fear, out of anger. So the context, I will come to that point. The context is pretty important here today.
Mm-hmm.
The noise cannot be dealt with just simply by associating it with loudness, apparently. And cities do not always have higher sounds than other places, by the way. Mm-hmm. Rather that our perception of loudness depends on our subjective assessment. That's what Gurney says. So subjective assessment, the context, because like in the city, we could have a rather silent space, mm-hmm. but one day there is a feast, a celebration, or there could be social or cultural or political sounds. So these can change. Okay, it could be loud with feast and celebration, but it could still feel good, dynamic and happy, but also it could be political that is not making you feel good because you're on a different part, political part, and it could make you feel annoyed, and you can say that it's noise. And today we have, of course, we have noise music, which is totally a different field of music. I mean, not today, it's been going on for like 30 years, but it's becoming more like perceived as I mean, aesthetically, it's perceived totally different today. And we also have these noise waves, white noise, pink noise, brown noise, these special frequencies used for music therapy to heal tinnitus, for example, or other problems. So it has very different connotations and reflections.
No, that's fascinating. What about silence? Because you once said that the way we understand silence has changed throughout time, and it's now taking on a new meaning with the pandemic. So can you talk a bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it has been interesting to be experiencing silence for the last 1 year. I mean, it's we really experienced it a lot globally. On the streets, in the lockdown, you know, being alone, isolated. And while we have these very loud sounds inside and very silence, I mean, very silent outside. So there's this, you know, discrepancy in between. So this brought a different perception of sound too, and perception of silence. And I feel, and I also observe, that emphasis is more on sounds now, because I mean, we hear, I mean, people do use masks, and we hear more of people's voice than their, we don't look at as much as before, we don't look at the mouth, we don't look at the mimics, gestures, but we hear more of their voice. The sound became more crystallized for us. We, for example, I got to hear more differences between people and how sometimes I feel how beautiful people have voices, you know, how beautiful voices they have. And I even say to them, hey, why don't you sing? Or do you have dubbing or something? You have a beautiful voice. So I think people do get to be more concentrated on sound in general. And one other thing is some of the humane sounds, you know, physical sounds like coughing, apparently, or burping, sneezing, and such, they're much less, you know. That's contextually, they have to be oppressed. And so this feeling of oppression brought silence as well. So, and sometimes lack of expression, you know, before we would say in small communities and small neighborhoods, we would say hi to somebody that we don't know on the street. But today it's more difficult. I don't know. Well, I mean, I say hi to someone and sometimes there's no response.
Yes.
And one other example, interesting example to me, when I was reading an article, it was the news on Nippon in the Japanese channel. It said, they said the food culture might be transformed nowadays. They gave the example where the children are now instructed not to talk during school lunch. Yeah. So, yeah, although this may initially seem uncomfortable, after a few years, eating in silence, they say, could become the cultural norm. So prior to the pandemic, people were perfectly willing to share a hot pot meal with new acquaintance, but this might not be the case in future now, I'd say. So it's a very sociological transformation that has reflections to do with sound too. Absolutely. And to do with silence.
And changes some of our rooted cultural manifestations almost, like the the way we relate in society, many of these many of our practices, they kind of they demand a certain a ritual or interaction that might be changing.
Yeah. Now. Or customs, yes, traditions, exactly. Even. Yeah.
Yes. And what about the single that you released called Silence White? What did you want to express with that?
Yeah. So, yes, this is my first solo single. It's called Silence White.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. It's released last month. And it's the first time I used my own vocals, where I discovered my real sound, I can say.
Yes.
Yeah. And during lockdown, on a Sunday evening, it's produced in full silence in my balcony. And it expresses my feelings about this super weird period of time. And in this song, I use different textures and samples and try to express the nature and urban imbalance. And yeah, it's a poetic journey, I would say, a transformative blast of emotions finding its way for peaceful silence in and out, like because we don't have that balance now, and it's a search for that. Yeah, you can check it on Spotify and all platforms. I also created a music video all on my own using my iPhone. Yeah, if interested, you can check Silence White on YouTube as well.
Yes, I've seen it, but whoever is listening should also see it.
Yeah.
But so you have this, now that we're kind of, we started a conversation talking more about the theoretical grounds to which your work emerges, and we're now moving towards more practical side of it, of music production, and I know that you also have a band called New Park. So I would be interested in seeing your perspective on the relationship between practice and research, and the way or the importance you give to each, or the way you balance the two.
Yeah, I've been producing music and designing sound for approximately 20 years, and New Park Band has been alive, thankfully, for 15 years. It's a slow-paced band that releases, to me, authentic and intimate feelings with textures. Mm-hmm. And it goes in the fields, records sounds, sings on it, and improvises on stage. And there are concepts of tension between urban and natural forms, as I mentioned before, and human-made and non-human-made, or digital and organic. They're fully there. These concepts are fully there.
Mm-hmm.
And I also design live sound for films and performing arts, especially for contemporary dance. In all things, my research topics and practice topics are kind of similar. And improvisational acting in research, for example, being directed to the sound atmosphere, that inspires me instantly. And researching and diving into it is an improvisational act, I would say. It gives me the motivation to create an artistic form out of it. So I do research, go deep in it, and then try to give the output.
Mm-hmm.
And I improvise when I play on stage, the way I improvise searching for the sound.
Yes.
That speaks to me.
What do you do as an artistic programmer and manager at the Kot University Cultural Center?
Yeah, it's been 10 years there that I've been working at Kot University as cultural and artistic events coordinator. So I'm the artistic programmer of our cultural center, which is called SGKM, let's say, Sevgi Gönül Cultural Center. And it's located on our campus, and it's hosts numerous concerts, plays, movie night events, recitals, exhibitions, dance performances, and jazz sessions, classical music sessions, jamming sessions, and lately soundscape workshops and soundscape concerts. I was able to integrate this field into the cultural center too. So where the professionals from soundscape fields do come and do give workshops, still do, they do, I mean online they do. Mm-hmm. Sometimes because this soundscape, you can see it has it's very interdisciplinary. It has linkages with urban design and artistic production and music therapy, healing, many more. So it's very fruitful. So I want to put that into here.
Nice.
And I mean, this culture center, I mean, it provides outreach to a diverse array of events, including, yes, different festivals. Hopefully there will be a soundscape festival too in the future. Mm-hmm. And theater, dance, film, mm-hmm. short film, and such.
So it's a place where many artistic expressions converge and you kind of help decide these events and program the mm-hmm. the year, the artistic year of the institution, right? Yeah.
Sometimes we do it together with students, together with academicians, departments, and it's exciting. Still going on, very exciting. Absolutely. Because it's endless, you know, you can do anything there. And it's a good hub now to bring together artists and students and professionals, academicians. Sometimes science and art to speak. We have exhibitions too, where they meet. And we have talks about these two fields, and it's
a work of, it's almost a curatorial work, right?
Yeah, it is. But we have a team that's really good.
Nice. And to wrap up, I would like to hear your thoughts on how your work and research may be further developed in the future, or the kind of direction it's pointing towards. Mm-hmm. For instance, what is the kind of underlying project and what do you want to achieve in this intersection between sound and the urban realm? I know mm-hmm. this is obviously an open question, but I find all this, everything that you've been talking about very exciting, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on the direction this is moving towards.
Yeah. I've been thinking about that for the last 1 year, especially in the pandemic. What will I do? Because I mean, I think everybody is thinking about their future. We don't know, but
yes,
in terms of like hoping. Yeah, I hope my music productions and organizations will go on. Maybe even more interdisciplinary, because I really like to work with different disciplines. And maybe integrating extended reality technology, like movement, dance, but also using sensors and even artificial intelligence and many more, because so many things are going on right now. And we did actually make a research and practice project last year with a dance company called Torque that I've been working for the last 4 years, together with Yıldız Teknik University, Koç University, and the Karma Lab, which is a laboratory researching the extended reality solutions for different disciplines. So we did try something. We did work on a project, but we could not extend it because of the pandemic yet. but I think we will go on that. And that's really exciting to me to see the different possibilities related with sound and all these disciplines. And in line with that, I want to go further with urban design and soundscape linkage to help architects and planners use sound as a very valuable asset for their plans.
Have you ever had a chance to collaborate with any architect or planner yet? Or
we did try to work last year on Kadıköy Square master plan, because there was a competition last year by the municipality, and we did work hard to integrate sound into the plan and designing participatory tools and also sound objects, sound furnitures, let's say sound sculptures for the square. So there I did work with architects and urban planners and sociologists. That was very interesting. Yeah. Especially for Turkey, because we don't have that practice at all. It went on well, but then it is not chosen in the competition, but the jury gave a very good feedback about the sound, because they said using sound in the plan is very valuable, so we would like to see other works of you in the future. So hopefully I have that team now that who are interested in soundscape, so I would like to work with them in different projects too. So but also I want to work with children and organize soundscape workshops tailored for specific ages.
Thank you very much for your time and for all these amazing thoughts. I learned a lot, of course, but I hope everyone listening as well. So it was a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you so much. It was a very big pleasure for me to be with you, Gabriel, with Istanbul 74. So yeah, I mean, anyone who is interested, you can check Kadıköy Acoustic on Facebook. It's still on Facebook.
Thank you very much, man.
Thank you very much.